Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, August the 2nd, 214th day of the new year. Getting ready for the county fairs? Okay, maybe you're attending the county fairs. We've got Dan Larkin from OES with us, so as you're preparing for the fairs, let's prepare for some of the things that we also know are going to come around the corner. They may not be date specific. We'll talk about earthquakes, tidal waves, and some of the other natural phenomena that are going on, and we'll get an update from Dan from some of that kind of stuff too. We'll do it when we come back.
I'm Mark Biette with today's garden tip about not being a prunomaniac. The conscientious gardener needs to know that each kind of plant has its own best time to be pruned. Avoid shearing flowering plants into shapes which really look unnatural. Thin flowering shrubs with a hand pruner. I'm Mark Biette with today's garden tip.
You've got to get up pretty early in the morning to hear Mark Biette and his wealth of gardening knowledge. 5 to 7 a.m. Sundays on KWSW 980.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Times 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Dan Larkin from the Humboldt County Office of Emergency Services. But before we hear from Dan, we'll hear, quote, from Mr. Ford. Yes, the Mr. Ford. Not Gerald. Henry. Quote, time and money spent in helping men do more for themselves is far better than mere giving. How you been, Dan?
I've been fine. How are you been,
bro? Oh, well, the ground isn't shaking underneath me, so I guess it's not as challenging as it could be. There's always that caveat. When you're hearing about some of the hot temperatures in the Midwest and knowing what they're going through and the tornadoes and the hurricanes and all that kind of stuff, are the preparedness rules of thumb the same there as they are here for us with earthquakes and the tsunamis and the floods and the windstorms? Is there a basic unit?
They're exactly the same, Ryan. It's the same exact preparedness issue. It's just a different subject.
Fill in the blank, so to speak.
That's exactly right.
What's other than running to the wrong corner in the basement? What's the biggest mistake we make in our region about when an event happens?
Well, the event that we're most used to is the sudden earthquake, obviously. And the biggest mistake people make is they try to get out of where they are instead of doing the basics which we all teach, which is essentially drop, cover, and hold on.
You forgot prayer.
Well, actually, you should do that after you drop cover.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kind of comes naturally, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
So we will try to get out, and that's because the fear that something's going to land on us?
Well, I don't know the reason for the fear, but everybody has it. You know, when the ground shakes, the first thing you do is, how do I get out of wherever I am to something that's open-spaced? And that's really the wrong thing to do.
Is it? I go doorway. That's I don't. Where we are now, there's a cantilever. Mm-hmm. I would not go here. I would stand in the doorway behind me. Is that old thought?
That is old thought. Certainly, I mean, if you're going to stand in the doorway, it's, I guess, as safe as standing anywhere else. But it's better, you know, actually to do what the mantra says, which is drop down, cover yourself up, and hold on to whatever you're near to, preferably getting underneath something that's sturdy, like a table or a large desk or something.
So what is the negative about standing underneath a frame doorway? Is it
now you're getting me into an area that I know I'm going to get myself in trouble with.
I'm trying to think, you know, if there's windows nearby, okay, I get, you might, you know, catch some glass. I got that. But other than that, I would think that there's more supportive material over a doorway than there is in a table.
You know, if it was me and I was in a room with almost nothing in it, I'd go stand in a doorway. But the experts tell me that it is safer and better to do what we say, and that is drop down, cover up, and hold on to something, preferably getting underneath something to protect yourself.
There's not a whole lot of second floors around here.
No.
Third floors are scant. And above that, you're on your own, guys. If you're on a second floor, third floor, or in the Bay Area, and up in the double-digit floors, same concept? I mean, obviously, you're not going to get out of a building.
Right, the same concept applies. If the ground starts shaking, the safest thing to do is drop down, cover up, and hold on.
What if you're outside?
Drop down.
Same thing.
Exactly. You do what you can to stabilize yourself until the ground stops shaking, and then you take whatever actions are appropriate. If, for instance, in our area, if the shaking is extensive and very pronounced and it goes on for a long period of time, we're talking 20, 30 or plus seconds, that is a significant event. And if you're in a low-lying area near the coastline, you should automatically remove yourself from that area without being told as soon as the ground stops shaking.
Yeah, getting down and staying there is not wise. Yeah,
not if you're in within a tsunami hazard zone, which are well marked, by the way, in the county. You look at the streets and highways around the county, and you see these entering, leaving, and tsunami hazard zone signs all over the place.
What? You got one more. If you're inside a vehicle, okay, obviously the same mantra doesn't apply because we're moving. I know a lot of folks don't feel it, but they can see it.
They can see it, or they may feel like something is wrong with the vehicle, like a flat tire. I've heard that comment many times, that during an earthquake, they felt their car shimmying like the tire was going flat.
All of a sudden, yeah.
Safely get over to the side of the road, stop, and just sit there until the shaking stops.
Of course, by the time we'd stop, unless it's really long.
That's right. It's going to be over with.
If you're in your vehicle, I've never heard anybody talk about it, but we've had the overpasses drop a couple of times, bridges.
Which has since been retrofitted, by the way.
Right. Those have. But I heard a story earlier this week about 7,500, 8,000 bridges that have been identified but still haven't had the fix-up that they should have, based on that bridge collapse in South Dakota 7 or 8 years ago.
Well, if it's dark, a structural issue.
Right. If it's dark, when you're happening, or you can't see the bridge, don't cross?
I don't know. If the shaking is bad enough to cause an event where you are going to lose your bridge, believe me, you're not going to be driving. You're going to be stopping, slamming on the brakes. You're going to be... If it was that bad, I personally would be very cautious driving after the event, looking ahead of me, going slowly.
Unless you're driving away from the bay or the ocean to get up to high land. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:19. We'll be back with more from Dan Larkin.
There's a brand new show on KEKA 101 Thunder Country, Country Gold with Randy Owen, Sunday evenings from 8 till midnight. It's a four-hour intensive music show hosted by the lead vocalist of the group Alabama. Country Gold will feature 13 songs per hour and highlighted music from the 70s to the mid-90s. Be sure to listen to KEKA 101 Thunder Country, Sunday evening from 8 till midnight. Country Gold with Randy Owen.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Dan Larkin. Dan, as you consider some of the different choices, and I guess that's probably the biggest thing, personal choices that we can make in these kinds of scenarios when there is an event, and more surprise than anticipated. If anybody gets caught in a flood, shame on them. Same thing with a windstorm. I mean, come on. Yeah, how much notification do you need? But with the earthquakes, that is something I think that we are probably more accustomed to.
Oh, definitely. I just came back from a trip to the south, and where they have hurricanes and tornadoes and everything. And them finding out that I'm in emergency management, the first thing they ask me is earthquakes. They're afraid of them. They feel about earthquakes the way we feel about tornadoes and hurricanes. Exact same difference. They're used to it is the reason. They have something to base their fear on. They have some experience.
Yeah, past experiences.
Exactly.
Yeah. What would you suggest for folks to do, okay, if it's a significant earthquake, okay, if you're not in high land, get to high land. Got that one pretty well figured out. But what if it's one of those that you're not really sure? I mean, it's a little wiggle. Was that an earthquake or not? Is that enough to be concerned about? Or if you're, let's say, in an area that you're unfamiliar with.
Well,
so
you know,
we're traveling in the Bay Area or L.A.
As an emergency management person who espouses safety and preparedness and all that stuff, The obvious answer is if you feel any earthquake, you know, look at your surroundings, and if you're on the beach, you know, get away, be prudent. Personally, the little tiny shakers that you barely feel that last just a couple seconds, you honestly have nothing to worry about. But, you know, we're getting into the area here of what they feel at the time and where they are. And prudence is the best path to take. Always, if you are on the beach, if you are right down on the water and you feel an earthquake, if I was you, I would move to high ground. At least get away from the beach, get up into the parking lot, get away from the low surf area. Because we have had some earthquakes here locally. I think back to, I think it was June of 05 when we had the 7.1 that impacted the whole West Coast with all caused problems.
Right.
That earthquake did cause a very small tsunami to come ashore here that was measurable. And, you know, something like that can impact the wave action if you're right down on the beach. It's best to get away.
Safely.
Safely.
Yeah. The geysers feel, I guess, in Mendocino County. Is that just an area where there's enough steam so it's escaping? Is it the steam that's causing all those baby little earthquakes all the time?
Well, you're getting into an area here that I don't have a lot of expertise. The geology,
well, you got more than me. But so
that's a hot spot. That is an area where the heat from the lower earth crust is come closer to the surface. And it's heating water in the area, and the movement of the steam and the gases and the water and all that cause ground deformation, and it starts shaking. So, yes.
So it's not is it an earthquake technically?
It is technically an earthquake. It is, because it's a measurable earth movement.
But it's not the plate tectonics.
No, it is not. It's just a spot. However, you know that those spots, I am told, are all over the earth. There's some big ones, especially under Yellowstone.
Yellowstone has a whole bunch, yeah.
But along our area, especially from Mendocino North, Cape Mendocino North, the Cascadia subduction zone, that plate actually subducts and goes under the plate we're on. I believe it's the Gorda plate where we are, and the North American plate is also involved. You're getting into areas, again, that I don't have a lot of expertise. But as that subducts and goes underground, when it gets inland quite a ways, 150 miles, that's where this line of volcanoes starts that is at Lassen and goes all the way up into B.C.
Yeah, the Ring of Fire.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's because that land is subducted and has gone down low enough and has heated up enough to where it is now coming up as magma through volcanoes.
The earthquake we had in Willow Creek, Happy Camp, Wichipec, that area last month, would you have suggested that they react the same way to that as we do here? Is an earthquake regardless of where
that's
you happen
correct.
To be?
That's correct. Drop cover and hold
It's just
in those areas they don't have the tsunami threat.
So just a good old-fashioned earthquake.
Drop cover and hold on. I'll give you a little magnet
there
to put on your refrigerator. It says drop cover and hold on.
Let's see if I have any metal around me right now. It doesn't appear like I do. if you're in an area where you're not familiar with where the wash-up zones are for tsunami or tidal wave, or you don't know the magnitude of it. I mean, you got the signs out there on the highway. That's dandy. I'm sure that's for a certain level magnitude. How would you know if it's a bigger one?
It's duration. Learn to count the length of the shaking that you feel. And that's why we say if the shaking extends, if it's significant, it extends for a long period of 20, 30, especially when you're getting 30 or more seconds, you are either experiencing close hand or on the edge of a very large earthquake. And those large earthquakes are the ones, if they are centered offshore, and especially if they are on a plate which subducts or causes the deformation of the seafloor to go up and down instead of sideways, that causes a column.
Humboldt, Del Norton, Mendocino County, for example.
Yeah, for example,
yeah,
yes.
Okay.
But duration is the key. You count how long the earthquake lasts. For instance, and this is a hypothetical, we're here in Humboldt County, and we feel an earthquake that's not real strong. You know, it's a normal little shaker we feel, but it goes on and on and on and on. you know that there is a big earthquake. It's just far away from you.
Yeah, somewhere up the line.
And you better expect a tsunami coming your way. It's at least at some point in the next hours afterwards.
So that's when you tune into your radio station.
You do that.
Yes, thank you very much, Dan.
And you get off the beach and out of the low-lying areas.
That's right. And if you happen to cover, get out. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:30.
There's never been a clear winner in the so-called battle of the sexes, but in the battle for bacteria-free hands, one half of the population is germier than the other. So whose hands are cleaner, men or women? Hi, I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here's to your health. The researchers tested 51 college students using a new detailed system for detecting bacterial DNA. But remember, most of the bacteria in our bodies is either harmless or beneficial.
Dr. Hoffman answers some of your health questions on Health Talk, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11 on KWSW 980 AM.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:34. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with the director of the Humboldt County Office of Emergency Services, Dan Larkin. Do you get the Delaware County title, too?
No.
Delaware's got their own. No,
each county in California's got a person.
So who is it in Delaware County?
That's Cindy Henderson.
There we go.
Okay. Very, very knowledgeable lady and does a very good job up there.
But Troy's over.
But Troy is National Weather Service.
Yeah.
His territory is Humboldt, Delnart, Mendocino, and inland.
Yeah, he likes to share the fact that he's more in control than others. Dan, as we look at some of the history in our area, we have earthquakes. We can see that the Mad River area, a number of different presentations that have been put on that, measurements. Do we have histories of tidal waves or tsunamis in our area? Are those? Is there a historical footprint for those
yes,
also?
Yes, there is. And again, out of my realm a little bit here, but there is a very good geologic history in our area of very large earthquakes and tsunamis. The tsunami deposits, for example, off of Crescent City, where they've done some coring, show very clearly the tsunamis that accrued from the 1960 Chilean event and the 1964 Chilean event. But also going back further to the year 1700, it shows a very significant deposit.
That was a big one, wasn't it?
That was the local big one. Our last Cascadia event was in the in late January of 1700. And the reason they can date that so well is there's records in Japan of the tsunami crossing the ocean and hitting, and the only place it could have come from is essentially our area.
So. Go the other way instead of
exactly.
Like a big dock chunk that's
exactly.
Up in Newport. Yeah.
And then you go back at varying intervals of a few hundred to many hundreds and even thousands of years, and there are numerous events, some even much larger than what happened in 1700.
So as we look at the various types of potential tsunamis. Eureka, I know historically, was a town or an area with a bunch of canyons. Filled in now. But so if there is a major water event that comes in, does it get into those areas that have been covered up and kind of work underneath? Does it blow over the top of it because it's a quicker event?
No.
What happens when there's
not the tsunami. We're talking... To have an impact such as you're suggesting would have to be a localized event, a local cascade.
So we have
event.
To local biggie and then an immediate
yeah.
bam.
And what you're going to have in those areas of fill is you're going to have ground deformation because of the liquefaction of the ground. It's
like
kind
they
of
had
sandy.
In the Bay Area
yeah,
in 89.
It turns to mush.
Okay.
That's going to be a real hazard in those fill-in areas. Those areas that are built on bedrock, they don't have that issue. And you have alternating places, as you mentioned, along the coastline, because our mountains primarily go in a north-westerly, south-easterly direction, they intersect the ocean. And you have those areas of peaks and valleys that have filled in, and there's red bedrock and there's sediment areas.
For a tidal wave to come over and really have a big impact in Humboldt Bay, we've seen in Crescent City, Harbor, it's open. Trinidad, okay, fine. They got the big mountain, and it's not going to, unless it's really big, be much of a concern. In Humboldt Bay, to get a rise of 4 or 5 feet, 10 feet, 15 feet, because of the spits, is that really going to have to be a really big event?
Yes, no. Don't you love those answers?
Well, I figured the tide was going to be an factor there somewhere too. So
we are very fortunate that we have the spits, the north and south jetties, because they do act as an attenuating force to a water event. But still, especially the south jetty is going to be totally overtopped by a tsunami coming in of that magnitude, as are many portions of the north spit. Certainly from the harbor entrance up to near Manila, that's going to be washed over. There's no evidence that I've been told that the highest dunes in the Samoa area have ever been overtopped. But, you know, that's movable sand, so really how do you know? But all of the modeling that's been done, which is very good and accurate, by the way, shows that there are many safe areas in the higher dunes in the Samoa area especially.
So better to go there than it is to go off?
Oh, definitely. In fact, in a localized event, in a Cascadia event, the people on the spit do not have time to get off of the spit. They have to go to high ground. And there is a real effort underway to right now, especially in the Fairhaven area where it's just flat, to try and use some existing structures that are there
ground. The power plant?
That's correct. The power plant or the old pulp mill there. If you can get up to, say, the third floor or so there, there's a very good chance that you will not have water approaching your level of where you are. So there's an effort now to try and take advantage of that. It's not complete yet. Yeah, there's a lot of things going on to help that happen. Troy Nicolini is heavily involved in that process and be a good person to talk about.
If there was an event like that and then the drawback occurs, does that give enough time?
Well, remember that when you have a Cascadia event and you're expecting tsunami, a tsunami is not just one wave, it's multiple waves. And those waves can come at any time frame, from a few minutes to a few hours apart. When you are caught in an area and you have vertically evacuated to a safe location, that's the term, vertical evacuation. When you have got to that point, stay there until the all clear is issued, which could be 12 hours, 24 hours. Do you know that in the event we had in Japan on March 11th of 2011, the highest level of water intrusiveness into Crescent City Harbor occurred 24 hours after the first wave occurred, because you had water on top of a tide.
And everybody kind of relaxed a little bit.
You do. And in fact, in 1964, the relaxation of people thinking the tsunami wasn't going to happen is what caused most of the deaths, because people went back into the area and were caught.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:41. We'll be back with more from Dan Larkin.
Water always wins. That's why there's a Grand Canyon. I'm Glenn Higgy, America's master handyman. Keeping water away from your home's foundation is one of the most important things you can do. If your home is on a crawl space, you need to know what is going on under your feet. Your home's structural integrity and your family's health may depend on it.
Listen to Glenn Hagee Sunday morning, 7 to 8 a.m. on KWSW 980.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:46. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Dan Larkin. Dan, so in the event, we know where it's going to happen, whether it's an earthquake or a tsunami or whatever. What are the things that are recommended most in preparation? I would imagine drinkable water has got to be one of the top two or three things.
Remember that if we have the worst case scenario, the earthquake is the thing that's going to cause most of the infrastructure damage. Power lines down, water mains broken, roadways closed, on and on and on. The tsunami is going to come ashore in those areas that are low-lying, and it is going to cause complete destruction within that area.
Kind of finish up the job, so to speak?
Oh, it's going to do it big time. For those areas that are within the tsunami hazard zone, just look back at Japan. It is total destruction, and that's where most of the deaths are caused. You need to get out of there, in other words. You have that time frame after the ground stops shaking. But the impacts, the infrastructure impacts, are very widespread. There's lots of slides in the roadways. They're closed. Water mains are broken all over the place. Sewer lines broken. Power lines down. It's going to take a long time to bring those things back online. Some of them could be years, but obviously there's shortstops that need to be made to mitigate. Well, for planning purposes, I'm sure everyone hears a lot of different numbers. 3 days, 5 days, 2 weeks. Go as long as you possibly can in getting yourself prepared. Get as much food and water as you possibly can. Get batteries. If you're a camper, you're three steps ahead of the game because you have your camp stove and your tent and your sleeping bags and whatnot. Do those things that are going to allow you to exist without your normal power, without your normal water flow, without your normal transportation. Do what's right for your family, but err on the side of conservatism. Go longer out in your time frame that you're going to have to prepare yourself.
One of the things for me that has always been intriguing is it probably isn't going to just hit Humboldt and Dunlard County. It's going to be a bigger event zone, and who gets it first? Who gets the assistance first? And it's probably not going to be small town, backwater, Humboldt County.
No, it's
Dunlard
not, and
County.
This is a big issue right now. Starting a little over a year ago, FEMA, whether you like them or not, regions 9 and 10, which is the West Coast and the Pacific, and the local emergency management agencies in each state, CalEMA in our case, are going through a 2-year process called the Cascadia Project, where they are identifying those impacts which would take place in a Cascadia event, which would extend all the way from Cape Mendocino up into BC, Canada. Pardon me.
Oh, the whole northwest corner.
The whole west coast. And they're trying to build a plan to bring the resources from across this great U.S. all the way to the west coast to help us out in a way that would help us. In other words, there's going to be a big impact over a large area. A lot of people all along the West Coast, not just little old Humboldt County.
Yeah, you think it's something that would be of that magnitude. I'm thinking helicopters and Coast Guard.
In the short term, but we've got to bring more and more and more.
Initially,
than that.
Yeah.
And the plans are going in place to look at all those different emergency services functions, ESFs they're called.
Oh, the whole
which,
system.
Which runs the gamut of logistics and air power and food and water and medical. All these different things are being addressed to try and build a plan to have in place and jumpstart immediately when the big event occurs to come to our aid. And remember, the earthquake we feel on the coast, the 9.0, the big one, it's going to be a 7.0 on the I-5 corridor. Sacramento, Redding, Klamath Falls, on up into Seattle, those are going to be hugely affected by this event with a lot of people impacted, and they're going to draw those scarce resources away that we need on the coastline.
Yeah, it's not the first mountain range.
Oh, it isn't.
Yeah.
We're going to be farther away and more difficult to service, so that plan is taking that into account.
Thanks for coming by. Hopefully we'll be able to talk in a calm setting next time also.
Remember, drop cover and hold on.
Yes, I'm thinking stick your magnet. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. I'll see you tomorrow.